halacha is if you really prove that learning by its own sake, and here you're learning something that's completely wrong, inapplicable, preliminary draft status, just for purpose of learning.
Right. I mean, the Gemara has that concept. Drush v'kabel schar. Sometimes, let's say, for example, according to one opinion of the Gemara, the Ben Sora Mor never happened. So the Gemara says, so why do we learn it? It's an entire, you know, segment of the Torah. Drush v'kabel schar. There are certain things we learn. That's part of the Torah. That's part of, it's important to understand hava minas, even when they are ultimately rejected, because often we get foundations, we get concepts. Like this back and forth is important to understand, because Beis Hillel initially thought that it's, we could let an Eved work one day, and the second day he'll be free. And then Beis Shammai essentially enlightened him to this concept of not being able to get married. So that back and forth actually sheds more light than just simply Beis Shammai saying his opinion. Very often the contrast brings out the greatest clarity in one of the opinions. Right? That's, you know, as a lawyer, someone presses you on an argument that makes you make a better argument.
Fine-tune it.
Okay, so we're in the middle of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. We are, it's right where Tosfos Divrei Maskil Chirish is, right? It's the middle of the line, pretty much centered in Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. So we're going through the list of interesting individuals and whether or not they are Chayev or Patur in Re'iyah, which yet last week we said can either mean Ali L'Regel and or the Korban Re'iyah. So says Rabbi Tanchum, Amar Rabbi Tanchum, Chiger Beraglo Achas, Pater Min Ariyah. So we did mention in the Mishnah that a chiger is pater from Re'iyah. Someone's completely crippled. But what if he only has one leg that's functioning? So what about such a person? So says Rabbi Tanchum, he's pater. Why? Shenemar Regalim. It says Shalosh Regalim. So we translate normally Regalim as time periods. Right? The three Regalim. We don't translate it as the three legs. But Pasha Pshat, that's what the word means. It means legs. And so Regalim is in plural. So it sounds like if you're going to be chayev in Re'iyah, you have to have both legs functioning. And therefore, Rabbi Tanchum says, someone who only has one functioning leg is exempt. Says the Gemara, V'haragolim ibayale prat lebalei kabin. But there's something else Regalim excludes. It's not that it excludes someone with one leg. It excludes someone with a peg leg. Right? Rashi points out, someone who has their leg amputated, so they put a piece of wood there to balance. That's Bali Kabin. So Regalim means you have to actually possess legs. If you don't possess physical legs, then you are exempt. So how can you tell me that the word Regalim excludes someone that only has one functioning leg? But we know from a different brisa that the word regalim excludes someone with no physical legs. Says the Gemara, no. Hahu mi pa'omim nafka. Right? Because it says that we're olah l'regel three times a year. And he uses the word pa'omim. Now we think that the word pa'omim means times, and that's true. But now we know pa'omim can also mean legs. And therefore, from the word pa'omim, that excludes bali kabin. Because pa'amim means you have to have legs. If you don't have legs, you can't go. Then what does regalim teach me? Regalim excludes someone with only one leg. So we have two separate words. One of them excludes someone with no physical legs, and one of them excludes someone with one functioning leg. Ditanya. Now we're going to prove that the word pa'amim references legs, because we have the word pa'amim. So ain pa'amim ella regalim. How do I know that? In Ella means that the pum can only refer to legs. V'chinu Omer, because we have a pasuk in Yeshayahu which says, Tir mesena ragel, ragli oni pame dalim. It's referring to certain trampling over something. It says, Tir mesena ragel, ragli oni, that the legs of a poor person trample, pame dalim. Now, an oni and dalim are both referring to poor people. A dal is in the pasuk, right? And dalhu make it tal, just it's just a poorer person than an ani. An ani is poor, a dal is very poor. We know an evyon is like one of the poorest. There's a lot of different words to describe a poor person, but the synonyms essentially it's ragle ani and pa'ame dalim. So we see that if we're referring to the legs of different type of poor people, it refers to the legs as pa'ame. So you see very clearly that the word pa'amim can mean legs. The Omer, the Gemara actually quotes another pasuk that proves that the word pa'amim can mean legs. This is a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which says, Mayafu pa'amayich bana'olim bas nediv. How wonderful are the legs that are in the shoes, those who have volunteered to me. So That pasuk clearly proves pamecha bana olim, the something are in the shoes. What's in shoes? Legs are in shoes. The feet are in shoes. So now we just, once we quoted this pasuk in Shir HaShir, we have to know, well, what does it actually mean? So, right, that's generally, whenever you give the Omer, what was wrong with the first, right, pshat? Termas na regal ragli anim pamidalim? Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why the second pasuk was necessary over here. But yeah, that's always something to think about when the Gemara gives two psukim. So Darish Rava, my dichsev, my yafu pamecha bana'olim bas nediv. What is this pasuk actually teaching us in Shir HaShirim? Kama no'in raglehen shel Yisrael, b'sha'a she'olim l'regel. It's actually a praise to the Jews who are ol l'regel. And bas nediv is bito shel Avraham Avinu shenikra nediv. Here, bito could mean daughter, but here, more likely it means just the offspring of Avraham, which are called nediv, meaning nediv means someone who's volunteering something. Now, what do you can't...
Prince. Yeah, the English calls him a prince. Abraham is referred to as the prince. You are the daughter of the prince, and the prince is referring to Avraham Avinu.
Uh-huh. So,
it's not a giver, not a donator.
Right, so I was translating it based on Rashi, because Rashi, on the word shenikra nediv, says, al shem she nidva libo lahakir boro, that he essentially... That's Avraham.
Right.
Right.
That's why he's called.
That's why he calls the Nediv. Shenemar Nedive Omim Nesofu Imelke Avraham. So when it refers to the people as Nedive, people who are, right, we call the Nediv Lev, someone who's extra generous. So why do we link it to the God of Avraham? The Gemara says, Elke Avraham, below Elke Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Why would it link it to just Avraham? Ella, Elke Avraham, Shehaya Tchilo Lagir. And the concept of Nediv, of being generous, of doing chesed, very much relates to Avraham. As I just pointed out, Rashi points out that he was the first one to essentially give of his heart to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was tchilo legerim. What does tchilo legerim mean? So Rashi doesn't comment on this. Toso says, towards the bottom, shenitztave al hamila tfei mikol osim shalofanov, because he was commanded on mila. He was the first one in the Torah, essentially. It's recorded that he was commanded to have bris milah, and that's clearly a big act of chesed to take upon that mesiras nefesh. It's also interesting because if you take this literally, I mean, we generally think that there's no such thing as a Jewish person pre-matan Torah. Right? Were the avos Jewish? Were they not Jewish? I mean, what makes a person a Jew? I always thought it was the giving of the Torah. Until then, you could recognize God, you could fear God, but there wasn't a concept of Yehudi, that we had to cross over the Yarden, get out of Mitzrayim, get the Torah. But if Avram was a ger, if that Mila somehow converted him, then in some way, shape, or form, he achieved a certain status pre-Matan Torah. We actually find this in one other place I was thinking about. The Gemara records, we had several parshas ago, the episode with Yehuda and Tamar, where Yehuda essentially approaches her, thinks she's a prostitute, and they have a dialogue. And according to the Gemara, in that dialogue, he says to her, by the way, are you Jewish? Which again, it's a little ironic considering what he's proposing. Mm-hmm. But yes, and she says, yes, I converted. According to the Gemara, she says, I'm a ger. So, and that apparently satisfied him. Okay, fine, she's a kosher Bas Yisrael. So, yeah, so... So you see there really is a concept of ger. Now, what would that mean, though? If there was no Torah, what are you converting from? What are you converting to? I mean, we do have Gemaras which tell us that the Avos kept the Torah. Avram kept even mitzvot derabbanon. So they kept that on their own. They didn't need to necessarily convert.
Well, weren't they just separating themselves from the rest of the flock? That concept of Kedusha, separateness in some way, whatever applied to them at that time.
Right, but did they need a formal gerus for that? From Tosos, it sounds like this Mila somehow related. I mean, Tosos is translating. What does it mean he was a ger? Because he was commanded on this Mila. We know Mila is one of the stages, one of the steps in the conversion process. Now, did he go to the mikvah? I don't know. Did he accept mitzvos? Probably, because what are mitzvos? Mitzvos is the will of God. And if we believe that Avraham Avinu recognized the will of God, so I think the standard approach to that Avram kept the mitzvahs is it means he was in tune to the will of God. So
right.
he sort of
entire mitzvahs happened at Harsinai.
But he anticipated what God would want.
Like Yid Hanasha. How do you explain?
Yeah, how did he know Erev Tavshilin? The answer is if you a person, you're in a relationship with someone, you can almost anticipate they're going to like this flavor, they're going to like going here. So he anticipated what God would want because he had such a close relationship with him. That's probably what that means.
Yeah, but it makes absolutely sense. It didn't happen until a couple of generations later.
A lot of these things. The Erev Tavshilin is a Gzera Derabbana, unless one comes to cook for a good.
He became the first monotheist. And this is what he threw. To say mitzvah, it means he was a monotheist.
Yeah, maybe not the particulars the way we know it today.
You know, Yaakov says, Taryag mitzvah shemarti and love him. Why does he Taryag mitzvahs? Why does he say, I kept the mitzvahs? It sounds like he's saying, I kept the mitzvahs that you know of in the Torah. Go one by one, I kept them. So what does it mean? Okay, food for thought.
Nobody
was there to hear him either.
Well, that's another question.
How many mitzvahs?
Yeah, a lot of mitzvahs.
Or Teluya on the Beis Hamikdash.
Another question you could ask is, he married two sisters. Yeah, that's against the Torah.
100%.
So, yeah.
Well, they say that's why one of them had died before he went back there.
It's possible. Another point I wanted to make is that in this pasuk of, it talks about praising the Jews for essentially wearing shoes to be ol regel. So it's very nice. It almost like we bifurcated this drasha. We have, on the one hand, we have the Pamei, essentially we have the Mayafu Pamecha ben Olim, which we said was a praise that the Jews were Ola Regel. And then it sounds like we have a completely separate drasha of Bas Nadiv, which is praising Avram and his descendants for being so generous, for being the first Ger, for recognizing Kadosh Baruch Hu, but yet it's juxtaposed in the Pasuk. So I saw Rabbi Yashiv, he has Ha'oros and different Masechtas, he writes on this that it's not no coincidence, because he writes like this. He says, you know, the Ramah, the first Ramah in Hilchos Pesach, is the source of something called Kimcha de Pischa. Essentially, when they come collecting before Pesach, that's like a tzedakah that's, you don't need like a Kelmer stamp on it. It's like the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch stamps that. It's like if you're collecting from before Pesach, that's like a real chashuv tzedakah. And the Ramah put it in the Shulchan Aruch because it was something that every community had to take upon themselves. So Rabbi Yashiv says, what was the tzedakah like back in the day? There wasn't like established shuls, but there were clearly poor people. He says, you know what the tzedakahs were?
Mayor Balanes had it been back then.
For sure. he says, you know what the tzedakah was? It was shoes for Aliyah L'Regel. Mm-hmm. Right? People lived in off-site communities, in a week, two-week journeys. You couldn't just be wearing your Yom Kippur shoes. You had to wear some serious, good shoes, and many people couldn't afford that. So they would raise money for people in the community that everyone should be able to be Ola Regel with proper shoes. It says, now I understand the pasuk. The praise is, Mayafu Pa'amecha B'na'olim Bas Nadiv. Praiseworthy the Jewish people who is able to come together based on the midah of Avraham Avinu, of Chesed, and make sure that all Jews can accomplish this mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. No foot will go without a shoe. That must have been some type of slogan they must have had in their stucco organization. Exactly. But that's a Rabbi Yashiv's shot in how to explain this pasuk.
Beautiful.
So now, once we got there, let's say about this, is that there are certain Amoraim that they don't get mentioned very much in Shas. So when they get mentioned, they have to get mentioned all their statements. You know, so Rabbi Tanchum is an example. He doesn't have too many statements throughout Shas. Right. So once he says one thing, the Gemara says, okay, let's bring all of Rabbi Tanchum's statements in here. Let's group them together. So now this is another statement of Rabbi Tanchum. It says the following. Darsh Rabbi Nasan bar Meyumim Mishum Rabbi Tanchum. And this is just from several parshios ago. So Ma'idich Siv V'haborek Inbo Mayim. Right, when the brothers threw Yosef in the pit, it says that the pit was empty. It didn't have any water. So we know the famous question. It's redundant. If it's an empty pit, clearly it doesn't contain water. So what's the drasha? Ella mayim einbo. It doesn't have water. Aval nechashim v'akravim yeshbo. The pit did contain snakes and scorpions. So I'm going to tell you now my go-to pshat for a dinner table, for a party. You want to impress someone. You say this, it'd be very impressive. Okay. So what's the pshat over here? So this Gemara actually appears also on Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph and Shabbos. Now who knows what Dapim Chav Aleph and Chav Beis and Shabbos are talking about? It's famous Dapim. It's Chanukah. Right? There's no Maseches Chanukah. Chanukah appears in Daf Chav Aleph, Chav Beis, maybe a little Chav Gimel, in Maseches Shabbos. So over there, Rabbi Tanchum has a statement. Rabbi Tanchum says, a statement that also we know from Hilchos Sukkah, which is a menorah above 20 amos high. If you assume an amah is about a foot and a half to 2 feet, so about, let's say, 30 feet high, above that, a menorah is pasul. That's Rabbi Tanchum's statement, period. The very next line of the Gemara says, Rabbi Tanchum, and then it quotes this drasha, of habor reik ein bo mayim. Okay, so on the surface, you could just say, the Gemara was looping together all of Rabbi Tanchum's statements. But there are some achronim that think that if you're going to loop together the statements, there has to be a reason why you put this next to that. It can't just be random. So I saw one of the achronim says the following. He says there's a very important reason why we need to know one halacha of the menorah above 20 amos being pasul. On the other hand, that Yosef's pit didn't have water, but had snakes and scorpions. And he starts with the obvious question we all ask on this drasha, which is, if the goal of the brothers, of Reuven especially, was not to kill Yosef, so when we read the story to our children, we don't tell them there were snakes and scorpions in the bottom of the pit, because that wouldn't make any sense. If you're trying to save Yosef, you put him in a nice pit that's clean, that has toiletries, that's, you know, he could actually survive there, so that when you come back later, you can take him and sell him. You don't want him to die there, that's why you didn't kill him. So now this drasha of Rabbi Tanchum, that the pit didn't have water, had snakes and scorpions, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that scorpions and snakes they're deadly, they're venomous, scorpions especially. Can't survive in there with them. So what kind of drasha is this? This kind of ruins the whole story. He says, no. That's why this drasha is juxtaposed to the halacha that a menorah above 20 amos is possible. Why?
Can't see in the bottom.
Oh. So we have this also when it comes to sukkah. The first daf of Masechta Sukkah gives three reasons why a sukkah above 20 amos tall is possible. What is the reason that we assume?
Your eye doesn't glance.
Oh, how do you say that? Well, shilta ba'ine. What that means on the surface is that, at least when it comes to a sukkah, it has to be, the schach has to be something that you feel. You recognize its presence. And the Gemara assumes that something above 20 amos tall, it's not even in your peripheral vision. It's not something you sense. Something that's near you, this ceiling, for example, we're not looking at it, but we can sense it. Something that's higher than that, that's more than 30 or 40 feet high, just human recognition, we don't necessarily sense that. So we have a Gemara in Erechim, which tells us that the word hishlich, which means to cast, to throw, it's not just a lashon of toss. It's a deep bomb. It means above 20 amos. So when the brothers throw Yosef into the pit, it says v'hishlicho sohabora. So they didn't just nudge him in. They didn't just tip him in. They went for a deep pass. They threw him very deep. So what does that tell us? It says that it doesn't mean they tossed him 20 amos that way. It means 20 amos down, meaning the pit was 30 or 40 feet deep. It was a deep pit. The hishlich oso habora means they didn't just cast him in a 6 foot pit. They threw him in a pit that was 30 or 40 feet deep. Now, if that's the case, lo shilta ba'ine, not just up, but also down, right? We don't sense things that are 30 or 40 feet in any direction. And therefore, it makes sense because this was a deep pit. So Reuven and the brothers, yeah, let's throw him in the pit. They didn't realize there were nechashim v'yakarvim in the pit because they were on the bottom. And a person doesn't sense something that's that deep. And that's why Rabbi Tanchum juxtaposes his opinion that a menorah above 20 amos is possible. And also, by the way, the pit didn't have water, as things scorpions. It was coming to counter your question of, but if it has things and scorpions, then why would the brothers do that if they weren't trying to kill him? The answer is, a menorah above 20 amos is possible. Meaning, above 20 amos will shilta ba'ene. They threw him into a pit that was 20 amos deep, and Mamela, the brothers didn't see there were snakes and scorpions there, and so they threw him in there innocently, not realizing these could have killed him. Now, obviously we know the ending, it was a miracle, and the snakes and scorpions did not kill him. The brothers didn't know that though. So that's the drasha. How
about the 30 feet drop?
Yeah, they could have killed him at the drop.
You ever hear of a stride jump? I learned that in Can't Take Him.
With pillows on the bottom?
fell on the same scorpion. Yeah.
They didn't have deep ones because they couldn't see.
They couldn't see. No. They couldn't see the bottom.
You're saying they could kill them just so they get them up. It's a long jump.
Why is it really heated here?
How do you even get it? Well, everything mentioned from Tanchum, we can keep.
They lowered them into the pit. They lowered them as they sent the rope down.
Yeah, maybe they sent the rope down. Okay. So again, remember for any dinner party, especially around Hanukkah time, impress your guests. Okay. So now we're going to get into a little bit of a story. And this story is going to last for about the next amud or so. So Tana Rabbana. Ma'isav Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Rabbi Lazar ben Chisma, Shahachul Haklil Panir Rishul b'Pekin. So you had this Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Lezer, who basically went to greet their Rebbe Rabbi Yeshua in a certain town. Now Rashi points out, this was on Yontif. There's a chi of the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah to greet your Rebbe on Yontif. Actually, one of my first kinos b'nei yeshiva, remember this?
Yeah, of course.
In Westhamsted. Of course you remember. You could probably say the whole thing.
He wrote it.
On Pesach, it was about whether nowadays there's a chi of to go greet your Rebbe on the regal. And Rabbi Yehuda famously says, no. Why? Because it wouldn't make sense. If we're not going to the Beis HaMikdash, but we are going to greet our Rebbe, it would seem like we're giving more kavod to our Rebbe than the Beis HaMikdash, even though you're right, on a technicality, we can't go to the Beis HaMikdash, but it doesn't seem right to do it. It's obviously still a good inyan. I know many, I think Rabbi Galler, you told me, goes to with Rabbi Simon on Chol Moed. There's an inyan to go see your Rebbe on the Yontif. That's what they were doing over here. So Amar Lahem, so the Rebbe says to them, Ma chidush hayab beis mikdash hayom. So you're in yeshiva today. Tell me what your Rebbe told me. Obviously they had a different Rebbe. Amar Lo, so the Talmidim said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Rabbi Yeshua, they said, Talmidecha anu, umimecha anu shosin. What do you mean? I don't speak of any other Rav except for you. Rashi points out that ve'ein lanu l'daber b'vanecha. I don't feel comfortable quoting other opinions. I mean, you're a Rebbe Mofak, Rebbe Shua, and I don't feel comfortable telling you what I learned in Shir today from a different Rav. Amar lahem, okay, afo bikin, get over it. Ef shalabes medrash below chiddush. Okay, but there's maybe you're nervous because you think it's something I said that contradicted it. Tell me a chiddush. Obviously something you said that was new, that was something that I haven't heard before. So he asked them, he asked Talmidim, Shabbos shel mi haisa, whose Shabbos is it? So this is actually a reference to the Gemara in Brachos, which we know from Pesach Seder, which is there was a whole story with Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, where they wanted to essentially uproot Rabbi Gamliel. It's coming up in the Daf Yomi in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to get Rabbi Gamliel out, had the Nasi, they wanted to replace him with a young guy, his beard turned white, that was the whole story over there. But something that you would never find the shul nowadays doing, they had a rotation. Right? But like co-rabbis, not a rabbi assistant rabbi. They had essentially switch off weeks. Now that wouldn't fly for a lot of political reasons. I could see what if everyone likes one rabbi, they overthrow the other one. But here, they had a system where Rabbi Lezer, since Rabbi Gamliel was the incumbent, where he was already there, so he spoke two out of every 3 weeks. And Rabbi Lezer Rezariah, the newbie, spoke every third Shabbos. So apparently, they were there on that third Shabbos. And by Shabbos, I mean week. He gave Shir that entire week, including Shabbos. So Shabbos Shel Lezer ben Azariah Haisa, v'mah Haisa Agada Hayom. So what was he giving Shir on? So Talmidim said, Amru lo b'parshas Hakel. We spoke about this last week in terms of the connection between Re'iyah and Hakel, where they all gathered to hear the Melech read from the Sefer Torah. So v'mah Darishba. So what did your Rebbe Lezer ben Azariah, what was his drasha today based on Hakel? So the following, the Talmidim said, the pasuk says by Hakel, Hakel asa'am, gather the nation, ha'anoshim the men, v'ha'anoshim the women, v'ha'taf, and the children, im ha'anoshim bo'im lilmod, if the men come to learn, noshim bo'os lishmoa, and the women come to hear, taf lama bo'im, what's the point of bringing a kid? Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, k'dei litin schar l'mivyehen, to give schar to those who brought them. So in this one little line of Lezman Azariah, there's a little bit to unpack. Right? I understand on Noshim Ba'am Lilmod. Right? The Melech's reading from Sefer Torah, men have a chiyav to learn Torah, so they're coming to learn the Torah. What does it mean that the women are coming to listen? Why are they not coming to learn? Why are they coming to listen?
No chiyav on them to learn. Is there a chiyav on them to learn?
You tell me. So this really gets into the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah elsewhere, Ben Azai talks about whether you're supposed to teach your daughter Torah, whether you teach her, it's like you teach your Tiflus. We have a whole sugi of women's learning. What I find fascinating is, I think many of us are familiar with the, almost like the compromise opinion, which the Ramah brings down in Shulchan Aruch and Yoredei HaTeilos Talmud Torah, which is that women on the books do not have a chiyuv of Talmud Torah, but, says the Ramah, they do have a chiyuv to learn the halachos and the mitzvos that apply to them. which is why they can still make the brachas of Lasok B'Divrei Torah, because, for example, they wouldn't have to learn the halachos, let's say, of Duchanin. Right? Now, why do Levi and Yisrael? Because that's still Talmud Torah for us. But a woman would only have to learn the mitzvos, the halachos, that are shayach for her. So
how do we expect the women then to teach the children?
Well, we did speak about that, whether or not they have a chiyuv teach everything. Maybe that's referring to the hashkafa, maybe that's referring to Yiddishkeit itself. Right? We pointed out that that's also debatable.
So maybe that's the hearing. The hearing is sort of disseminating which is applicable to them and which is not applicable to them, maybe.
Oh, no, so that's what I'm getting to. Right? In the sense that the gra on Shulchan Aruch always is very terse, right? The Vilna Gaon on Shulchan Aruch, he'll give you Mar Makomos for what the Shulchan Aruch said. So on that line of the Ramah, where the Ramah writes that women only have a chiyuv to learn the halachos that apply to them, the Gra says, see the bottom of Chagiga Daf Gimel. Yeah. So the Gra seemed to assume that what we learn from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah teaching us, Nashim Ba'os Lishmoa, your point, that they're not coming to learn everything the Melech is saying, they're coming to hear and discern and decipher what applies to them. And that's the source that women only really are chayiv to learn what applies to them, because otherwise it should have said Nashim Ba'os Lilmod. It changed it to Lishmoa because it's a different type of chiyuv. So that's essentially what's going on there. Now what about the next line? Why are the children coming? The children are coming to give schar to those who bring them. So that's even hard to understand on a simple level. What does that even mean? The children are coming to give schar to those who bring them. It's like almost like a manavshach. If they're not chayav to be brought, then what schar do you get from bringing them? And if they are, then the schar is the fact that they have to be there.
Well, it's chinuch though, right?
So the first question we have to understand is what age children are we talking about here? Mm-hmm. Are we talking about a baby? Or are we talking about a 9-year-old? Or an 8-year-old?
We said about it in the...
We talked about it last week, correct.
Well, so, shoulder.
Right, so over here, there's a wide range of opinions. I'll point out to you the bottom Tosfos over here, which is very controversial. It says, V'alzeh samchu... The short, though, most controversial.
Hardest word.
Yeah, V'alzeh samchu lahavik tanim bebeis ha-kneses. Right, so any shul that has a no-kids policy, you bring them as Tosfos. You say, I don't know what you're talking about. The Gemara Chagiga, Daf Gimel, the Tosfos says, from the fact that they had to bring children to Hakel, and Hakel was a group of Jews coming together to daven to learn, you see a source that children should be brought to shul. Okay.
It doesn't define the age.
So some say this is referring to even babies, even young children. The problem with saying that is twofold. First of all, did they really bring babies to Hakel? I mean, had that work? Had anyone hear the Melech? If they had 5,000 babies over there, all crying. But on the other hand, it wasn't like they really had babysitters, because if the mother had to go and the father had to go, who were they leaving the kids with? So
the person without legs.
How are they going to achieve the diaper?
The grandparents. We're always babysitting.
So the Birkei Yosef, the Chidah, and Shulchan Aruch, he wants to say that this cannot be referring to small children. Why not? Because there's a halacha that I love to quote, because it makes me feel like, you know, I came back from Israel a little frummer, and I could, like, you know, stick it to the previous generation. You know, we always like to find something, you know. Your kalim are kosher. I couldn't get you on the tefillas kalim, but, you know, something else. So one halacha that's recorded in Shulchan Aruch, very clearly, based on the Gemara and Brachos, which will come up next week, the Gemara and Brachos says that a person cannot daven Shmona Esrei while holding a knife, right? While holding a Sefer Torah, while holding a plate of food.
Halakha topic.
Okay. Why? So the Gemara says, because these are all things that you're tarred with, lest they come to fall, and therefore, the Rabbanan made a gzera that you're not allowed to hold in during Shmona Esrei, because that would be counterproductive to your davening.
Your cell phone.
So that's a big shiloh. What about a cell phone? If you're davening from it, surely yes. What about not? Okay. But the post can bring down, what about a child? Right? This is a lot of shalom bias issues, right? My wife wants me to bring the kids to shul and drop them off in the men's section, and I say absolutely not. keep them in the women's section. Okay, but I late night, I was with them up early. So how do we handle this? So
you take them to the grandparents. Women's section. Simple.
No, so the problem is, right? What happened? It's musaf time. Right? The rabbi just finished giving the drasha. Now the kids enter. You have a 2-year-old who has the lollipop, but finishes the lollipop, mishmona esrei. And now, so hold me, if you don't hold them, they're going to cry. But the post can bring down. You're not allowed to hold a child, especially a child that can't walk on its own, especially a child that needs you to hold them because you have the same issue of tirda. That how is it possible for you to focus on mishmona esrei when you're holding a child who you're going to be very concerned if you drop them. Now, a 5-year-old child, that's already, they can walk, so dropping them is not going to be a big deal. But a 2-year-old, a 1-year-old, holding a child like that during Shemona Esrei seems to be in the same category as a knife, a plate of food, money, they say. So that's a halach on the books. So try my best to say, you know, yeah, the children come, if they can sit quietly next to me and suck their lollipop, or 5 lollipops, however many, keep them quiet. But if they need me to hold them, then they're going to have to come after Shemona Esrei. Now, obviously, there's situations that's not possible, right? A woman could bring in the kid to shul, and she's crying. So then, there's a shaila. Does she have to go out? What's better? For a woman to pick up the child while davening Shemona Esrei, or leave shul with the child? So Rav Sternbach, there's an English shefer actually called Rig Shei Lev, which halachos for women in shul, and it's not so simple, right? He says that if a woman can daven after, she should leave. But if not, then she holds the child. We're talking about ideally, right, to set up a situation, we should try our best to set up a situation where the children don't need to be held during Shemona Esrei. So it says the Birkei Yosef, how could this Tosos tell us, you know what, bring all the kids to shul? But who's holding the kids? So if we're talking about a 1-year-old, then Tosos doesn't make sense because it would go against the halacha of not holding children. So therefore the Birkei Yosef says it must be we're talking about 9-year-olds or a person who is old enough that they don't need to be held and they can have proper decorum in shul. Right? So this issue really comes up in what age the child is, but that's only one issue. The second issue is, what's the schar l'miviehen? So the reason why I would say it can't be talking about a kiddush higilah chinuch is, what's the schar of bringing a kid who's higilah chinuch to a mitzvah? The schar is that the kid's now, it's chinuch, right? But yet the Gemara seems to assume there's some external schar for bringing this child, which makes it seem more like the child's a young child. And it's not a chinuch child. So there's really two ways you can go with this. One pshat I saw is that, like we said before, there's no babysitting because the grandparents also have to be old arego, right? Unless they really can't. But if they can't walk, how are they going to watch the kids? So if everyone's going, that means the babies have to go. They just have to. So Rav Yashiv also writes this. He says, you know what Kadosh Baruch Hu did? He put in the pasuk that the taf have to go. Litin schar l'mivehen. It was a tova Hakadosh Baruch Hu did. He said, you know what? I know you're bringing the kids anyway, but now I'm going to command you to bring them. You know, give you a free mitzvah for it. Right? You were going to be bringing the kids. Why? Because you had no babysitting. But now the pasuk says bring the kids, so it's a free, and that's consistent with what we always say before a Kaddish, which is, lefikach, hir b'lehem toru mitzvos, right? Because God loves us, He gives us more mitzvos, right? This is almost like how you speak to a high school kid when they say, oh, I hate mitzvos, such a burden, right? So what do you respond to that? You say, there are so many options, right? Like, if you don't like this mitzvah, we're not saying you don't have to do it, you still do. But everyone takes to different things, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us so many options, opportunities. You can put on one shoe, then the other. Oh, you got a mitzvah, because Halacha says, you put on shoes in a certain way. So it's not like you have to be engaged in Shiur HaKein to be doing a mitzvah. Your whole life could be mitzvos. And so here, a simple, mundane act of just schlepping a kid in a car, or on a camel, or by their hand, and taking them to Yerushalayim, which would have been a burden and a tircha, God says, no, I'm mitzava you this. It almost enriches every aspect of the journey, not just as a mundane journey, but now it's a requirement. The other angle that one can go on this is that there actually is value in taking a child somewhere, even when they have no idea what's going on. They record, this is almost like a level that it's hard for us to understand. They say that, like, the Chazon Ish, for example, his parents, like, wouldn't take him to anywhere where there was women not dressed appropriately, even in his stroller. Right? They felt that, I guess they already saw potential in him, or they had some type of siyata d'shmaya, they knew that was happening. But even a child that young, somehow in a spiritual sense, experiences things. And just like we say, let's say when it comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, this week's Parsha, talk about him not wanting to nurse from non-Jewish women, which it's not like, first of all, it's pikuach nefesh. Of course you're allowed to drink non-Jewish woman's milk. Plus, that milk's not even necessarily treif per se, it's just ideal. But yet we say over there that the Rama over there at Shulchan Aruch writes that we believe that even if you're supposed to do it, it's possible that milk will be matamtim the lev. Right? There's something, I was just actually talking to my wife about this, because my daughter just yesterday, do you know about this? My daughter just yesterday went to some feeding therapist, and without knowing, the feeding therapist gave her something not kosher. Okay, so she's literally 15 months old, so no one's breaking a sweat. But I did feel bad, because this Rama says that a little child who eats not kosher, again, no one's fault, there's no avirus here, but we believe that there's something holy about kosher food and inherently unholy about something. Now, again, you could argue and say, it just didn't have an OU. It doesn't mean there was pig in there. So you could definitely argue that. But we believe something that's not kosher is inherently unholy. Hashem says it's bad for you. It's bad for your leaves, bad for your neshama. So even a child who eats something not kosher, somehow it could have an effect on them. And therefore, the opposite is true as well. A little child, what does he know? Let him watch that show. He doesn't really know what's going on. No, there's an inyan, even schar l'mivay, and there's schar for a parent to understand, to recognize that even at a young age, a child can be subconsciously influenced or experience things that can affect his neshama, even though it doesn't seem like they're affecting his guf right away. So there's a lot, obviously, to say about that one line. I just said some of them briefly outside, but I think we got to go on to the daf. We gotta continue.
Just one small point. We learned that the children in the womb learn Kol Torah Kulo, and then it's knocked out, right, with this little thing here.
Yeah.
So again, like any, first of all, how could understand that? How could an embryo or a little fetus know everything, whatever that means? But then for the second year born, every kind of little exposure is a building block of, no matter what it is, right. It's a building block from the original Torah that.
Very interesting. Right. Okay, so back to the story. So remember, the Rebbe asked Talmidim, what did you learn this week? The Rebbe was Ben Azariah. He said, we learned this drasha by Hakel. So Amar Lahen, the Rebbe Yeshua says back to Talmidim, Margulis Tova Haisa Biedchem will be Kasha Lavdi Meni. You learned such a great pearl, a gem, and you tried to make me lose it by not telling it to me. He was praising essentially the drasha that Elazar ben Azariah taught them. The Od Darsh. Elazar ben Azariah also darsh in the following. Es Hashem ha'amarta hayom, v'Hashem ha'mircha hayom. Right? This is a pasuk that essentially is pointing out that Hashem speaks to you today, and Hashem distinguishes you today. So, Amar Lema Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam, you give me one small praise in this world, v'ani eseschem chativa achas ba'olam, and I will give you, the Jewish people, one small praise in this world. What are the praises we give God, and God gives us? Atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam. We give God a special praise. D'chsev, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Essentially, we're saying, whoa, God, you are the one God. V'ani eseschem chativa achas ba'olam. And I, God says, will give you a small praise. Shenemar, umi ka'amcha Yisrael, ka'yachad ba'aretz. Right? God says, wow, what a nation I have who's unique in the land. The afhu pasach v'darash, and he also darshan the following. Now there is a machlokes between Rashi over here, and they quote from the Marsha, who exactly made this drasha. Was it another one, a third drasha of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, or was this Rabbi Yeshua essentially taking over and saying, I have my own drasha to offer you, Talmidim? But either way, the following drasha. Divrei chachamim kedarvonos. The words of chacham are like darvonos. Darvonos is like this tool that they use to essentially keep the cattle in line, a metal poker or something like that. So words of Torah like that, ukimas meros, and they are like nails, netuim that are planted, bale asufos, those of that are gathered, nasnu meroa echad, that are given from one shepherd. So this pasuk needs to be unpacked. So says the drasha, lama nimshu divrei Torah ledarvon, why is words of Torah compared to this poker that they would use to keep the cattle in line? Loma Lacha is to teach you Ma Darvan Ze Mechavin Es HaParah L'Tal Meha. Just like this Darvan keeps the parim, the cows, the cattle straight along with the rest of the flock. Lahutzi Chayim La'olam. And that allows them not to go off and be in danger and ultimately reproduce. Af Divrei Torah Mechavnes L'Omdehem Midarkei Misa L'Darkei Chayim. Right, the words of Torah keep us straight. They keep us in the path going off from Darchei Misa. And we believe, Kihim Chayin V'Yorach Yameinu, the words of the Torah actually will keep us alive. So the problem is, Im Darvan Zem Metaltel, a Darvan is a tangible object. So it's replaceable, it can move, it's not necessarily stable or permanent. So after very Torah Metaltelin, so if we're going to take that comparison all the way through, it would come out that maybe Torah is not permanent, not always there. Tamalomar masmeros. No, the Torah is also like a nail. It's permanent. It's always there. The problem is, if you compare it to a nail, ima masmer zechaser velo yeser. Right? When you bang a nail into a wall, not that I would know, but I've heard that when you bang nails into walls, they make little holes. So a nail creates an emptiness. So maybe divrei Torah chaser velo yeserin. You learn Torah, but it's not all there. There's some lacking. Tamalomar nituim, like plants, like seeds. Ma netiyazu, definition of a plant is par v'rabba. It naturally grows and grows. So after the Torah, par and rabin. There's never lacking. It's always more to learn. There's always more to do. Now, what about bali asufos? Those who gather. Eilu talmid chachamim, sheyoshun asufos, ve'oskim batorah. They refer to talmid chachamim who sit together in groups and learn Torah. And by the way, the Marsha over here says, the best way to learn is b'kibbutz, is in a group. Yeah, we know that just anecdotally. We know we're trying to learn on our own, we do the best we can. We're in a group, we pick it up more because we say something doesn't make sense, someone else says, that's not true. And we're able to sort of feed off each other in the group setting. It makes the Torah come la'amiso, we ultimately get to the MS. So when you learn in a group, you have halol metamin, halol metarin. Some say tame, some say tahar, halol osrin, halol matirin, halol poslin, halol machshirin. So when you're in a group, you have six Jews, seven opinions. So shema yomer adam, heach ani lama Torah me'ata. Right? How can it doesn't make sense. When you try to learn, open up shas, tabez, there's too many opinions. Right? There's Rav Gamliel, Tanakama, Chachamim. There's a lot to keep in mind. And everyone says everything. You could almost always find one opinion that says something you want to say. Right? It's always a machlokes. So then how could I even learn Torah? Tamalomar says the answer is, that's why the pasuk concludes, that nistu meroa echad. The Bach changes the gears over here to fit the pasuk. That they're all given from the same shepherd. Kulam, kael echad, was one god, nasnam, parnas echad amran, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu gave it over, mipi adon kol amasim baruchu. Meaning, you have to realize that just because it's Rabbi Gamliel, Chacham, Rabbi Yeshua, Rava, Abaye, it's all the same source. They're not getting; they don't have different sources. They're using the same Bible. They're using the same ultimate foundation. They might be deviating in how to understand something. It would be very difficult if they were each using different texts. But because they're all based on the same text, then it's a matter of analyzing it and coming to the conclusion of who's more correct. Dechsev, by the Baal Kim, Eshkol HaRima Ilah. Right? Essentially, all this is Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, says Rabbi Yeshua, or Blazim Rezariah, to a Talmidim, Af Ata Ase Oznecha Kafar Cheses. You have to make your ear almost like a sifter. Right? You're going throughout your Shas career, you're going to hear a lot of opinions. Some of the opinions might be very enticing. Right? Someone was just telling me that their wife is maybe, I forgot, either pregnant or nursing, nursing, and their child is, I think, like maybe 19 months, 20 months old, they didn't fast Sar Batavis. Why? Because they heard an opinion that for the first 2 years of a wife, when she's nursing, you don't have to fast. Okay, that Rav Mordechai Willow does pass like that. If you want to ask the child, you could ask him. But you can find, if you want to find an opinion to support what you want to do, you could certainly find that. But you have to make your ear like an afar cheses in the sense that take all the opinions, right? And then sort them in the halachic process. Go to your rav, ask him how he paskins. The kanalacha leave me even lishmoa es divrei metamin. You have to find a heart and ears to hear both sides. Divrei metamin, divrei metarin, Devarei Ostrin, Devarei Matirin, Devarei Postlin, Devarei Achshir, right? The first sign of someone who's not a real Talmud Chacham is someone who only wants to hear one side. If they can't acknowledge that there's someone who says something, even if they don't pask like it, if you don't acknowledge there's someone else who says not like you, that's not the halachic process. You have to have an ear to hear everything, and then you sift. So Amar Lahem, so Blashon Hazeh Amar Lahem, Ein Dor Yosom, Shri Blazer Mazariah Shari Basocho. So now, these drushes were amazing. It wasn't Rezariah gave. So Rabbi Shua exclaims to Salmidim that any generation that Rezariah lived in was not an orphan generation. Meaning he obviously brought a lot to the table in that generation. So now the Gemara asks for Lemru Le Behedya. Going all the way back to the beginning of the story. When the Rebbe Rabbi Shua said to Salmidim, what did you learn in yeshiva today? And what was their response? No, we don't. What do you mean? You're our Rebbe. So it says, what's the problem? Like, we didn't really, the Gemara is saying, we didn't really chop what their problem was. Why can't you just tell the Rebbe what you learned today? What were you embarrassed about? What were you concerned about? It doesn't seem like there's anything inherently wrong with telling your Rebbe what some other Rav said. He'd be happy to hear that. So the Gemara answers, Mishamai Shahaya. They were traumatized because of an incident that happened that after you see the incident, you'll realize why they thought twice before saying what they said. The Tanya, Maisa Riosi ben Dur Miskis, Shahach Lahi Lepani Yer Lazer Belud, a certain Talmud, Rabbi Yossi, went to greet his Rebbe, Yer Lazer. So Amar Lo, exactly the same scenario. Mach Chiddush Yabes Medrash Hayom. The Rebbe says to the Talmud, what did you learn in Yeshiva today? Amar Le, the Talmud says, oh, so excited. Nimnu V'gomru, Te Yeshiva, we all got it together, we learned the Sugya, and we came to the conclusion that Amanu Moav, Ma'asr and Maisr Sheni Bishvius. Sorry, Maaser Ani Bishvius. A random halacha. Essentially, we heard in the Shemitah year, everything's Hefker. So we know Aniyim always, you know, in a 7-year Shemitah cycle, the 3rd and 6th years are the Maaser Ani years. But in the 7th year, you can't separate Peya, Shecha, Leket. So Aniyim have to fend for themselves. So there were several, essentially, pilgrimages to Eretz Yisrael. There was Oli Mitzrayim, there was Oli Bavel. By Bavel, that was Ezra. When Ezra came up, he did a new conquest. And the first conquest was Kitchur Yishona below Kitchur Asilavo. Meaning, when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, that Kedusha, that the initial conquest, it didn't last. So when they got exiled, the land didn't have any more sanctity. But when Ezra came, that sanctity remained. However, Ezra and Chachamim, they realized that we have to try to solve this Ani problem. Because the Aniyim during Shemitah year, I mean, during a year of, 1, 2, 4, 5, so fine, they don't have Maaser Ani, but they still have Leket Shecha and Peya from everyone who leaves it for them. And then 3 and 6, they have special Maaser Ani just for them. But in the 7th year, they're already poor, and now they literally have nothing. So what they did was, in the Eivor HaYarden, they had the places called Amon and Moab, where those nations essentially lived. And Ezra specifically did not conquer those lands. He left them without Kedusha purposely, so that during the Shemitah years, the Aniyim can go and collect from there. Because there's only an Isser of Shemitah if it's Kadosh. Right? There's no Isser Shemitah here in West Hempstead. So over there in Amon and Moab, it was just like West Hempstead. And therefore, he left it over for the Aniyim. Okay, anyone during Shemitah here, you all go to Amon and Moab, you'll get all the grains from there. Okay? Correct. Yeah. So, Amr Lo, so Yossi, Pasha Yadacha, the Kabbalah Necha. The Rebbe got furious. The Rebbe said, Yossi, stick out your hands and accept on your eyes. It sounds like he's basically saying, I'm about to make you blind. Pasha Yadav, the Kabbalah Enav. And in fact, he called him to be blind. Now Rashi points out, what was the big deal? The answer is, says Rashi, that it was the way he said it. It's always the way you say it, by the way. That's for marriage, for anything. It's not what you said, it's how you say it. So here it was how he said it. It was the fact that he said, Nimnu v'gomru. He made it sound like he and his friend decided that was halacha today. When, as we'll see in a second, this was a halacha dating back. Imagine if you said, oh, the halacha that I decided today is that, you know, I believe that, this certain thing is kosher and this is not kosher. Who appointed you in charge? Right? So that's kind of essentially what he was saying to his Talmud. Nimnu v'gamru, you decided, this is a halacha for all time. Right? Bacha Rebulazar, v'amar yisor sham li'reev, u'brisol odiyam. Apparently, secrets are only known to those who fear Hashem. So Amr lo, so he said to the Talmud, leich Amr lahem, al tachuj le minyanchem. you should know. I know what I said. I blinded you, but go back and tell whoever you were with today. Don't be nervous. You actually came to the right conclusion. You by chance got the right halacha, but just realize it wasn't you who decided this halacha. Because kach mekublani miryochem and zakai shisham mirabo v'rabo mirabo hilchos alamoshim misinai amenu moav ma'asher ma'aser ani b'shvius ma'atam. Why? Because harbi krachim kavshu oli mitzrayim v'lo kavshu oli bava. Like I said, they purposely didn't conquer certain lands the second time around. So that those lands would not have kedusha, and he let them over. So he got upset again. This was, they got it right, but the way they went about it, thinking that they were the ones who decided it, that was wrong. Now again, why would he blind him? So the Marshal and others point out because it was almost like a person. The Gemara says elsewhere, not in Nedarim, that a person who's more halacha pani ravo. Let's say you know your Rebbe standing right there. Someone asks your Rebbe a shayla, and you take it. Oh, I got this one, Rebbe. Right? The Gemara says you're chayav misa on that. It's pretty bad. So over here, essentially, this was a halacha that was muskum for all time. You're coming along and say almost like you're more halacha than Rabbah. You're saying I decided this. Who are you to decide this? So the Gemara elsewhere tells us in Darim that there are four people that aren't actually dead that are chashuv kames. Extra points. Who knows the four?
Poor.
Poor.
Blind.
No children.
Taras. So over here, blind is one of them, mm-hmm. Right? So he figured he was chayiv misa. Maybe he wasn't authorized to actually enforce the death penalty. But we know blind is ki'ilu death, so he did that. Or we know elsewhere, we know like what Yaakov Avinu, remember when Esav... Right, with Eliphaz, where basically the command Esav told Eliphaz, you have to kill Yaakov. Mm-hmm. Eliphaz was a shtickle tzaddik, not too much of a tzaddik, but a little bit of a tzaddik. He comes to Yaakov, he says, well, I don't know what to do. I want to listen to my father, but I don't want to kill you. So Yaakov says, take all my money. Gemara says, ani chashev kemes, you fulfill your father's words. That's also a side point. Fascinating. That there's an Indian to listen to your father, and that's like to Mekayim any of his words. That's like a separate topic, but okay. So Tana, la'achar shenish yasva daito. Then once the Rebbe calmed down a little bit, obviously he got very heated in the moment. Amar yiratzon shiachzru ini yosulim koman. Okay, you know I did what I had to do, but I dive in that your eyesight should return. The chazru, and ultimately the eyesight returned.
Maybe it also is just quickly. Maybe that when you see, you could be a bal gaiva. Sometimes by being blind, you actually could see better. Not physically seeing, but you could see spiritually better, okay, without the sight. You know what I mean by that?
So how does that relate to this?
So here he was a bit of a Balgaiva by coming up with himself. So by temporarily blinding him, you're now an Anav. But you actually see clearer, but you see clearer that it's not on you. It's on, like, you become more of a...
It's funny. I wonder if that's pshat. And the Gemara, you know the Lashon the Gemara always uses to refer to a blind person? Besides for Suma. Sagi Nahar. What does Sagi Nahar mean? Right, it's the opposite. Sagi Nahar means one who sees light. But so it's a euphemism. But according to what you're saying, maybe it's only a half euphemism. Maybe
really
someone who's blind really does see clear in a certain sense.
The question is what you see. It's not physical seeing. It's deeper seeing.
All right, let's stop here.